Chapter 22. The Hastening Saloon. From that day, Bond's recovery was rapid. He sat up in bed and wrote his report to M. He made light of what he still considered amateurish behavior on the part of Vespa. By juggling with the emphasis, he made the kidnapping sound much more Machiavellian than it had been. He praised Vespa's coolness and composure throughout the whole episode without saying that he had found some of her actions unaccountable. Every day Vespa came to see him, and he looked forward to these visits with excitement. She talked happily of her adventures of the day before, her explorations down the coast, and the restaurants where she had eaten. She had made friends with the chief of police, and with one of the directors of the casino, and it was they who took her out in the evening, and occasionally lent her a car during the day. She kept an eye on the repairs to the Bentley, which had been towed down to coach builders at Rouen, and she even arranged for some new clothes to be sent out from Bond's London flat. Nothing survived from his original wardrobe. Every stitch had been cut to ribbons in the search for the 40 million francs. The Le Chiffre affair was never mentioned between them. She occasionally told Bond amusing stories of head of S's office. She had apparently transferred there from the WRNS, and he told her of some of his adventures in the service. He found he could speak to her easily, and he was surprised. With most women, his manner was a mixture of taciturnity and passion. The lengthy approaches to a seduction bored him almost as much as the subsequent mess of disentanglement. He found something grisly in the inevitability of the pattern of each affair. The conventional parabola—sentiment, the touch of the hand, the kiss, the passionate kiss, the feel of the body, the climax in the bed, then more bed, then less bed, then the boredom, the tears, and the final bitterness—was to him shameful and hypocritical. Even more he shunned the mise-en-scene for each of these acts in the play, the meeting at a party, the restaurant, the taxi, his flat, her flat, then the weekend by the sea, then the flats again, then the furtive alibis, and the final angry farewell on some doorstep in the rain. But with Vespa there could be none of this. In the dull room and the boredom of his treatment, her presence was each day an oasis of pleasure, something to look forward to. In their talk there was nothing but companionship, with a distant undertone of passion. In the background there was the unspoken zest of the promise, which in due course and in their own time would be met. Over all there brooded the shadow of his injuries and the tantalus of their slow healing. Whether Bond liked it or not, the branch had already escaped his knife and was ready to burst into flower. With enjoyable steps Bond recovered. He was allowed up, then he was allowed to sit in the garden. Then he could go for a short walk, then for a long drive, and then the afternoon came when the doctor appeared on a flying visit from Paris and pronounced him well again. His clothes were brought round by Vespa, farewells were exchanged with the nurses, and a hired car drove them away. It was 3 weeks from the day when he had been on the edge of death, and now it was July, and the hot summer shimmered down the coast and out to sea. Bond clasped the moment to him.